You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Welcome to the 602 Club, Trek FM's General Geek Show. So excited to be here tonight as we record this. We are mere days away from the release of Solo, a Star Wars story. And I'm very excited because we're going to be talking about the lead-in book from Del Rey into that movie called Last Shot. It's a Han Solo and Lando adventure, and it takes place all over the timeline. And so I'm so excited to dive into this one. And I'm really glad to have back from Star Wars Bookworm. So you know you're getting a book expert, Aaron Goins.
Hey, Matt. What is up? I don't know about book expert, but, you know, I read a book just like anybody else reads a book. So expert's a little high, but we'll see.
So are you saying you also put your pants on one leg at a time?
One leg at a time, man. One
just
leg
blowing
at a time.
My mind tonight.
I flipped through a book one page at a time. That might have been a better... I just flipped through it one page at a time, just like everybody else.
Man. When I'm watching Flash and he flips through all the pages just to read a book, I'm like, man, how awesome would that be? Like, to read that many books that quickly, just be awesome.
And I will admit, I am not, like, as much as I do love to read and I read all the Star Wars books, I am not a fast reader. I never have been. And I actually, it's funny because mutual friend, Bria, she is a fast reader. She can read ridiculously fast. Like, she picks up these books, she gets it sent to her, and she just reads through it in a day. And it takes me, you know, weeks to get through a book.
Yeah.
And she always gives me such a hard time because I tend to get the book a little bit earlier than she does. So I always, like, I send her a quick text and I'm like, hey, got the book. You don't have it. Ha, ha, ha. You know, kind of trying to rub it in. And then my goal is always I'm going to finish this book before she gets it so I can say I've read it before she did. And then, of course, I never do. And she gets the book and reads it in like a few hours. So, and then she, of course, then rubs it in my face that she finished it before I did. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I'm a relatively fast reader, although when I'm doing a review of something, I do try and slow myself down on purpose, just so I can make sure that I'm catching all the intricacies of the plot, and I make sure that I'm underlining things and that kind of stuff. So I try to make sure that I'm not just buzzing through it, because, you know, I can speed read with the best of them, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'll retain much of the story. So I'm not that good.
You do written reviews too, right?
I do. So yeah, my written reviews go up on Star Wars Report.com, which, by the way, we were supposed to have Bruce Gibson here tonight, and he was not able to make it because of work, and so I just want to give a quick shout out to him. Make sure you do check out Star Wars Reports, where you can find Bruce talking about all sorts of Star Wars things and his opinion on Solo. So, and make sure you check that out. So, I just want to give him a quick plug.
Yeah, when I used to do the written reviews, it was definitely a different process going through the book. I usually tried to take notes on every chapter and, like, highlight all the high points and stuff. But now that I stopped doing the written reviews and just review them on the podcast, it's a little less effort. I don't know why. I think because, like, when you're podcasting, you can rely on, like, whoever you're podcasting with, like in tonight's conversation. You know, you're going to fill in the gaps that I don't remember. I might fill in the gaps you don't remember. You know, we can kind of bounce off each other. But when you're doing a written review, you're all on your own. So you got to kind of make sure you get all the details.
Well, before both Aaron and I fill in the gaps, you can find us all over the place here. You can find us online. Make sure you're checking us out. One of the best places to go over is iTunes at itunes.com/trekfm. And I wanted to say a huge thank you because we got our first written review over there on iTunes in a long time, you could also call it Apple Podcasts, either one. But yeah, we got a brand new review there for the 602 Club, and it's I don't ever know how to say names on iTunes. It's always difficult. So they said, really enjoy this, 5 stars. And it's something like Kiss to Dan, something like that. But I wanted to say thank you to them. And they said this, finding myself binge listening to previous episodes of the 602 Club and skipping my other podcasts to do so. Great work. I don't know of a higher compliment, honestly, than you saying that you're skipping other podcasts to listen to back episodes of the 602 Club. I really appreciate that. Try to make the episodes as evergreen as possible so you can't listen to them anytime. So go over there, give us a star rating and review while you're over on iTunes. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. So anywhere that you have any podcatcher, you can find us there and listen. You'll want to check us out on Twitter at TrekFM. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Make sure you're liking and following us in both places. We have the listeners only discussion group, which is called the Babel Conference, and that's on Facebook. Now, if you're on Facebook, type Babel into the search field, or if you're on the website at trek.fm, hit discussion on any of the menu bars. That will bring you over there, and we can let you in the group, and you can talk with all the other fans about everything we're talking about here on the network. And then last but not least, at Trek.fm, you can go to trek.fm/contact, choose a show, choose the 602 Club, and that email comes to me and anybody else who is on that week. So, last shot, Aaron, is a very interesting Star Wars book in that it's not just one story at one specific time frame. It is 4 different stories. Now, I would say it's actually 5 different stories because 2 of those stories have to do with Han and Lando and the different time periods. And then you have this story about our villain, Gore, and his kind of rise. And so you get Lando, which is his storyline in the past takes place before the new Solo movie. Han's takes place after the new Solo movie. Gore's takes place sometime in that time period between all of those things, it seems like. And then, of course, we have our post-Return of the Jedi storyline for Han and Lando as well. Now, I put those in different, because they each have their own specific arc that's happening to them, but they're also similar. So I wanted to ask you, before anything, what did you end up thinking about how, you know, this structure works for telling this story about Han and Lando and their adventures?
So the story that's set after Return of the Jedi, just to be clear, is, I think, based on some of the references that I heard in the book, it also takes place after the Aftermath novels.
Correct? Yes, I got that feeling as well. Yes.
Because I think Han references back to the events that happened on Kashyyyk.
Yes, he does. So, at least it's after, Life Debt. So that has happened and Chewie is back on Kashyyyk.
Yeah.
So yes.
So did you listen to the audiobook at all or did you just do the novel?
I know people love audiobooks and I know Star Wars audiobooks tend to be fantastic, but for me personally, audiobooks, I tend to not pick up as much if I just read the book. So it's much better for me unless I'm on a very long car ride. Audiobooks just don't do much for me.
Okay. So I did a bit of both. Mostly I read the novel, but I did pick up the audiobook as well because I was curious. And going back to what you were talking about, the different time periods, it was interesting because in the audiobook, they actually got different narrators for each time period.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it kind of helped you know whoever the voice was, you kind of remembered what time period you're in. Whereas in the novel, you kind of had to rely on the chapter title, but the chapter, and then it would say, you know,
right,
15 years before or whatever. So that was nice. But yeah, I thought the format was interesting and I actually enjoyed it for the most part. I will admit that I got a little confused a couple times because I was just like, wait, when is this happening again? Or like, how does this relate to this other thing? But by the end, they kind of tie it all together. And so it seems like with these Del Rey books recently, I'm thinking of Phasma specifically, where they kind of did a different way of telling that story. Remember, they were telling it from someone else's perspective and someone's telling a story from almost like a third hand type account. And that was an interesting way to deliver a narrative. And this was a whole nother interesting way to deliver a narrative. So it's like they're trying to get creative with how they're telling these stories. And I thought it worked for the most part for the book.
I agree with you. And I specifically agree that there were times where I would go back in time to either Lando or Han's part of that story in the past. And I would be, I felt slightly discombobulated because I was so wrapped up in what was happening kind of in, I'll call it the main A plot, which is the post Return of the Jedi post, you know, aftermath era, where I would get back to that and I'd be like, oh, where were they again? And part of that as well was that there, and maybe I just sound like an idiot and just can't remember things, but I'm older, so, you know, give me a break. But because there was also Lando and Han, it just felt like sometimes it was hard to remember where all of the different storylines were. And part of that is there were points where I felt like we'd get to the next chapter in the past with either Han or Lando, and I couldn't necessarily remember how they got to their next stop. Mm. Like it, and so like how the jump had been made. Okay, we moved from this place in this storyline to this place in the storyline. And I don't know if that was just me or if it was other people. So I'll be really interested to see if other listeners felt like that, or was that also where you sometimes felt like, okay, where are we?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that did help was certain characters that only showed up in mm-hmm. certain timelines. So that kind of helped ground it. So, for example, Taka only showed up in the future timeline. They didn't show up anywhere else in the other timelines.
Right.
Sana, I believe, only showed up in kind of Han's earlier timeline.
Yep, yep.
She didn't show up later. And then I think in L3 only showed up in Lando's early storyline. So there were certain characters as soon as I, you know, was like, okay, L3's here, we're back with Lando again. Or, okay, Taka's yeah. here, we're back in the future again. So that did help to have certain characters that didn't jump around.
Yeah, that I think you're right. And for the most part, I agree with you too. By the end, everything does come together. Mm-hmm. Like, all the different storylines do converge in a way that makes sense. And I thought that was something that was well done. And I agree with you, you know, telling Star Wars stories, you know, obviously we had the Legends line for 20 some odd years and, you know, hundreds of books. And so there were only a few that I can remember that really switched up how you told stories. Like I'm thinking of like I, Jedi. And you know, something like Phasma, or even, you know, like From a Certain Point of View, where you're really trying some different storytelling techniques to make it interesting. I think it works for the most part. So structurally, the book ends up coming together. The only thing I think might have helped me slightly, I was thinking about this today while I was doing my run. I was thinking through the book. And one of the things I thought, you know, I kind of wish sometimes that the chapters were longer, because there are some chapters that are like, especially digitally, it's like a page and a half and you just move on to the next one. And sometimes that would be all you would get from the past timeline. So I just wish it had been expanded just a little bit to give that a little bit more context. So I felt a little bit more rooted in that part of the storyline, as much as I was feeling in the quote-unquote present storyline.
And sometimes chapters would end, and then the very next chapter would be the exact, still in the same time period.
Yeah.
And you're almost like, wait, why'd they make a break there? Why didn't they just continue the chapter? But I will never complain about short chapters. I actually love books that have very short chapters, because it feels like it's tricking my brain into these completion points where I'm like, okay, like, oh, it was only 4 pages, I'm done with chapter one, like, let me jump into chapter two. Whereas if it was like 20, 30 page chapters, I'm like, by the time I get to the end of that first chapter, I'm like, oh my gosh, it took me forever just to get past chapter one. Like, and I start to burn out. So I love short chapter books.
No, I honestly felt like for the most part, it helped in this book too, because it helped the action keep going.
Yeah, so, it feels like a continuing motion, I think, when I read these. I think like if we're thinking of like Legends books to compare it to, I'm thinking, if I'm remembering correctly, I feel like Paul Kemp was a writer that used very short chapters. And I remember kind of feeling this pace of his books always felt like you're on the move, you're on the move. Although I guess he did do a canon novel as well with, Lords of the Sith.
Yeah, I was just thinking that that book felt very snappy. Like the action never stopped, and this does feel reminiscent of that as well. So the book, it really kind of revolves around our two main characters of Han and Lando, and their connection to our villain. But also just really watching those characters and how they've evolved from the past all the way even before we, you know, I know, Aaron, you've seen Solo. You got to see an early screening of it. But, you know, most of us haven't seen that yet. So this is kind of before we even knew them, and A New Hope and then Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, all the way through where we haven't really seen much of them, honestly. Like, we haven't seen a ton of Han or Lando in the post-Return of the Jedi novels. And so this is really the biggest place that we get to see them. And I wanted to ask you just about specifically Han, because I have to say the strongest part for me of the story is these characters. But I really resonated with Han, the young, carefree guy just out for adventure, to being the guy who's been a general, trying to figure out how to settle down, be a husband and a father, and feeling like a complete failure at it all. Like, I felt like Alder really found a way to dig into the character of Han and give him some real depth, but at the same time keep that Han-like levity to it all. It was a really good job of creating the character of Han in this book.
I definitely agree. I thought that the writer did a great job of portraying Han. And Han's a hard character to nail down, because I think it was really hit and miss in the old legend stuff with Han. There were some books that really glorified him as a character and tried to turn him into something that he wasn't, in this really intellectual, almost level character. I remember reading, you know, Love It or Hate It with Timothy Zahn books, but Scoundrels was a book that I felt like didn't get Han right back in the Legends era, because Han was almost like this mastermind, this criminal mastermind, or maybe not criminal is the right word, but, you know, he's kind of this mastermind character in that book where you're like, when have we ever seen him that intelligent, you know? But I think I think Lawrence Kasdan's been quoted as saying Han isn't that smart. You know, he's not meant to be written as an intellectual character. And so I thought this book really did nail that. I thought they portrayed a Han in this book that, you know, is obviously competent and skilled, and has his own level of intelligence, but he's not the smartest man in the room. You know, he acts off of emotion. He gets in over his head with a family. He doesn't know how to deal with having a child and being kind of, you know, pinned down with that. And I thought that Daniel Jose Older did a really good job of portraying that version of Han, which I think is very true to what we see, especially in like the original trilogy.
You know, something that connected with me as well that I thought was really neat, was the way in which, you know, Han, just specifically thinking of Han, who has Han ever had as a role model to teach him how to be anything, you know? And so he has kind of, I think I got the feeling from this book that Han has always kind of felt a little bit like a fraud who's just pretending to be better at things than he actually is, because that's what's kind of kept him alive. And now he's come up against something, being a husband and a father, where you can't pretend on that one. You know, like it's not about pretending. It's about really putting your heart and soul into something and doing your best to make it work. And I thought that was a really nice look inside the soul of Han Solo, because to me, it brought the character to life in a funny and kind of irreverent Han type way. But you also felt the way in which the character inside has so much turmoil, and he didn't even know how to express it. Like, when he's talking to Leia and they're having those conversations, like, she understands what he's trying to say, even when he's not really saying much, because he doesn't know how to explain his feelings, you know? And I just, again, I felt like this is so key to who Han Solo is. He's all bravado on the outside, but he's really a bleeding heart on the inside. He just doesn't know how to put all that together.
Yeah. It's funny to see, because you see him in when they first show him with Sana, and we know her from the comics, that she's shown up in the mm-hmm. in the Star Wars comics. But this is the first time we're actually seeing her in a novel, which I love the crossover. I love it when the comics.
Yeah, it was great.
In the novels, you know, kind of do that type of a crossover. But in the first scenes with her, it's kind of like he's like brooding over a girl. You know, he's got this. He's down. He's sad. You know, it seems like he's had his heart broken, and it's interesting to see Han act that way, because we're kind of, you always get these images of Han Solo where, like, you know, where Lando, you know, we see him as like this ladies' man, and you kind of get that from Han, but it's almost like Lando is legitimately a ladies' man and Han thinks he's a ladies' man. You know, he puts on that he's a ladies' man, but inside he just wants to find the right girl and settle down, you know? And I think you get to see that side of Han, where he is, even when he's apart from Leia, he misses Leia. You know, he's not out there gallivanting around the galaxy, flirting with other women. You know, he's missing the one woman that's in his life. And I like that. I like to see that version of Han, you know, that kind of that family man. And you start to see seeds of what happened with him and Leia, you know, by the time we get to Force Awakens, and for whatever reason they're separated. You're starting to see the seeds of that even in this story, like what led to that, because as much as he really wanted to be good at it, he wasn't. He just couldn't wrap his head around how being good at being part of a family.
You know, that's something that I was personally struggling with a little bit with the Han storyline, because I understood intellectually where they wanted it to go. But by the end of this story, it felt as though Han had come to a place where he was okay with not being perfect at being a father or being perfect at being a husband, but he was excited about the role that he is playing now. Like, and the conversation I felt like that he had with Leia, where she talked about him, you know, needing to sometimes go off and get an opportunity to think things through and figure things out. She understands he needs that, but she knows he'll always come back, you know, and there are going to be times when she's going to need to do that too. Like, which I think, you know, we're both married men. There are times you need time away from your spouse, right? You need to have a moment to yourself, whether you go hang out with friends or whether you just, you know, you go take a walk or whatever it is. There are those times when it's important to be away from each other, but then to come back. And I think, to me, I struggled a little bit with that, because I have a hard time with the storyline for them. And part of it was actually reading this book and seeing just how good they are together. And I guess feeling like, wow, it's kind of crazy to think that, you know, 20 years down the road, they're still kind of struggling with some of the same things big time. And instead of really feeling like that they grow, because this book left me with the feeling like that both Han and Leia have grown a little bit in this book. Yeah. And it just seems kind of sad to think that, you know, they can never really make it past certain things.
Yeah, and I think there's so much that happens between this book and the events of The Force Awakens that we just aren't even aware of. And, you know, things that can break relationships, break marriages. I think one of the big things that probably did happen is the fall of Ben Solo. And I think that is a strain. That was probably a big strain on their marriage. So even though they may have had it figured out, because what, this is only like 3 years after Return of the Jedi, maybe?
Yeah, like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. So, you know, they've only been married for at the most a couple years, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know the exact time they get married, do we?
No, Han just mentions that, you know, that, you know, there was Endor and everything just snowballed from there. And so,
yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, at this point, they're still early on in their relationship, you know,
yeah.
And they have a very young kid and things change. You know, I'm in a marriage. I've been in a marriage now for 17 years. And the way that we were 3 years into our marriage is a lot different than we were 15 years into our marriage. And so a lot can change to Han and Leia in that time period. And I do think that, you know, kind of the fall of Ben probably is really what pushed them apart, where the place that we see them in The Force Awakens.
When we think, I was thinking canon-wise, so, you know, the time that we see them before where they still seem to be okay is Bloodline.
Mm.
And that's what I think is supposedly about 6 years or so before The Force Awakens.
Yeah, that's right. That's pretty far into the storyline.
Yeah, it's just right as when Ben is about to fall. So it really, I guess it seems like then, if we're kind of putting it through, if I'm putting it through my mind, everything seems to be pretty good for them until that happens. I think you're probably right. So, and you're absolutely right in that, I know statistically the loss of a child traumatically, and I'm sure your son falling to the dark side qualifies as that. Is something that can ruin marriages. You know, that's one of the biggest things that has marriages fail, which is losing a child. So, yeah, no, I really thought the way that he captured Han and Leia together was great. Say nothing of some. There are some times when the dialogue works, and there's certain times where it doesn't work for the characters. But the feel I got from both of the characters, it did feel like them. So I thought that was that's the biggest part where, you know, you want to read a tie-in novel and feel like you know who it is you're reading and that they feel like, you know, extensions of what you've seen on screen.
Yeah, Daniel Jose Older definitely has a unique writing style.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think he captured the characters, but he captured them in a way that's very much in his voice. Where other writers may have written them differently and still captured the characters. I'm assuming that you read his story that was in from a certain point
yes,
of view.
Yes, yeah.
You know, the stormtrooper that had the obsession with the Dewbacks and kind of that weird story that's told from the stormtrooper's perspective and very humorous, very comedic. And I remember reading that and thinking, oh, this is really funny. I was laughing out loud at the story. And then I saw that he was going to be the one writing Last Shot. And I'm like, okay, like I can take that for in a short story, but I don't know if I want a whole novel with that tone. But quickly, like reading this book and getting into the beginning of it. And I think I even tweeted something out after starting to read the beginning of this book. I was like, wow, I really actually do enjoy this kind of more lighthearted, fun adventure type story. And I had predicted that it would be like one of my top, you know, five favorite canon novels. But I will admit that the further I got into the book, you know, the more I was getting a little tired of it, of the lightheartedness and almost wishing it would get a little bit more grounded. But overall, I think it worked fine, but I wouldn't want every novel to be like this or every Star Wars novel to be like this. Maybe once, you know, once in a blue moon kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's a good time real quick to talk about the style. And I'll say, for me, the thing that sometimes pulled me out is that the dialogue and the style of writing felt too modern for Star Wars. And that part also kind of went with the humor in some points, as well as apparently everybody just says ass all the time. It's ass this and ass that. And I was like, this is not a word we use in Star Wars like this. It's just not something we've done before. And it wasn't that the word ass was being used. It's just the way in which we're using it feels modern. And in the end, Star Wars is based off of specific type of dialogue and vernacular, and that's from, you know, 1930s serials. And so kind of pulling out that kind of fast-talking, dialogue, snappy comebacks and everything. I'm thinking specifically of, like, I don't know if you've ever seen It Happened One Night with Clark Gable, but the way the characters talk back and forth with each other, it's fast and it's just very snappy and funny. That's kind of what you want, and this felt more like a, you know, 2000s sitcom sometimes, and instead of that, and to me that style doesn't quite fit with Star Wars. Now, the adventure type story that we get here, I thought was perfect for Han and Lando. I think that is where it fit well. So, I would say, kind of style-wise, it's a mixed bag for me. Like, some of it really works and some of it doesn't there, but it doesn't destroy the story or how I enjoyed the book or the actual plot lines that went through.
Yeah, and I definitely see what you're saying about the modern style. There were some things that he included that you definitely have never seen in a Star Wars book. And, you know, he's describing kind of Lando picking out his clothes at one point and is describing kind of like, you know, parts of his anatomy, the way that they're laying against, like the way the clothes are laying against his body and stuff. And you're like, okay, this is a bit irreverent, not typically what you would see in a Star Wars book, but it seemed like people enjoyed it. You know, as soon as I read that part and was like, wow, they just talked about that. Okay. And then I saw instantly the other people reading it were posting on Twitter, oh, that's so funny, that's hilarious that they did that. So it's kind of like, what do you want out of Star Wars? And some people would prefer it to stay a little bit more a similar tone across the novels. And other people like the fact that one thing, you know, one novel swings heavy this way, one novel swings heavy a different way, you know, so you have something for everyone kind of thing. I tend to lean a little bit more toward things being more consistent, but I don't mind when they aren't. I don't mind. It doesn't ruin it for me. If a story like this comes up and there's a lot more casual, you know, speaking, or it's got a bit of a different tone to it and it's got a more modern feel to it, I'm fine with that because I know the next novel's not going to be like that. You know, I don't mind that they kind of jump around and have different styles, different tones.
Well, I think what did help is that this is a Han and Lando story. So when it came to the style, like of any of the characters that we're going to write about from the original trilogy, these are the ones where you can make that work. And there was a sense where, with where both of these characters are, where they were in the past and where they're going in the future, it fit. Because in a lot of ways, this is kind of like a situational comedy where both of their lives are, you know, love lives. And I think it's a great time to get into the Galactic Man of Capes, Lando himself. And I have to say, giving him and Han similar things to grow through here, which is, how do we go from being men who have gallivanted around the galaxy and kind of played it up in every way possible to being men who are now thoroughly attracted to a lifestyle to which we never necessarily thought we would be? And for Lando specifically, like you said, the playboy of, you know, Star Wars, is now finding himself in love with a Twi'lek and not quite sure how to handle that. And I thought, you know, Lando gets made fun of as being the ladies' man, you know, I mean, all of the characters of him. But I felt like this book really broke through the character and made him a real character again, where he's somebody who, no, he doesn't just want to be that. And I really enjoyed that about Lando.
Yeah, it was surprising for me to see that side of Lando. He definitely is smitten with this woman that he's with, and he really wants to be in a serious relationship with her. And she almost doesn't believe that Lando has changed. You know, she's kind of like, well, which version of Lando am I going to get? And so she's hesitant. It was definitely different. I don't know why it worked so well for me with Han and not as much with Lando. Like, I really believed this kind of like hopeless romantic Han Solo, but I didn't believe it as much for Lando. I think I felt like Lando, it was almost like I didn't want to see both of those characters kind of doing the same thing, and maybe seeing Han kind of be that way, but Lando still being the way that you're used to seeing him be. It felt maybe a little too similar. I don't know why. It just didn't work as well for me with Lando.
I can actually see what you're saying, because I feel like the problem with Lando, especially obviously with the new canon, is we just don't have a lot of him. You know, so what we know of Lando is so slight. And now to kind of go into a storyline where we're really going to try and evolve the character is kind of interesting. And it is, I mean, I like that they're on parallel paths, you know, him and Han, you know, that they've both gotten to this point in their lives, and they're both trying to make a big change to be more grown up, more responsible men, more honorable men in their lives. And I thought that that was really interesting. But I do kind of agree with you in some ways that it's not quite as strong as it could have been. And I think part of that maybe is that it almost feels like the characterization and the pre-story for Lando, you know, 15 years in the past, I almost feel like that needed to be expounded just a little bit, so that we had more context for who Lando has been as a character, so we can see more of the contrast when we get to the future.
Yeah, so maybe we'll get that in the movie.
Yeah, it could be. It actually, yeah, and that could be the thing, is that maybe we're meant to be left, you know.
This is this is almost like a companion piece a bit to the movie. Yeah. And almost not having the movie, it leaves a little bit of a hole in some of the character growth, probably.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. That's a great point. And coming from a guy who's seen the movie, that's helpful. So, what did you think of his relationship with Keisha? Because I liked her a lot in the book, and I loved the fact that she wasn't just ready to accept that, you know, he's really changed. Like, she wants to see the fact that he's actually different.
So Kasha, Keisha, maybe? Is it K-A-A-S-H-A? I think I was saying Kasha in my head.
I honestly, you know, Star Wars names.
Han.
You can say it a thousand different ways. So,
I think that it was a little too on the nose that she was Twi'lek, just because it seems like that's kind of the, oh, we need a sensual character that, you know, this guy falls in love with. Let's make it a Twi'lek. You know, that seemed a little on the nose, but
so you wanted maybe a Dathomite or something, or
yeah, maybe like Aqualish, or you know,
yeah, there, I yeah, mean, yeah,
just,
I
could, let's go, yeah, yeah, let's go, completely unexpected, but no, yeah. I think it still worked. It was just kind of like, okay, Twi'lek is the attractive, you know, alien, but. It was a believable relationship. They fleshed out that character. She was this cool, almost action hero type of character that you would see why Lando was drawn to her. You know, I thought that she was a very interesting character. She obviously, you know, had feelings for him. So yeah, I thought she was very entertaining and a nice addition to the story.
You know, what I thought was interesting about her was kind of the way that she seemed to feel like a spiritual successor to Hera. You know, she had a lot of that Hera-ness to her, where she is kind of an action-adventure hero kind of person, right? But somebody who really cares about stuff, you know?
Like a New Dawn Hera, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, yep.
Which I thought when I read A New Dawn, and obviously when we read A New Dawn, Rebels hadn't even come out yet, so we had no other reference point for Hera, and I really thought based on A New Dawn that Hera was going to be this kind of like, you know, undercover, you know, not necessarily, I don't know, I was going to say assassin, but she's definitely not an assassin, but just this kind of undercover agent type character that is this action star. That's the way she was portrayed in A New Dawn, and Kanan was very drawn to that. But I think once we got to Rebels, enough time had elapsed where she almost became this motherly type character, and she's the responsible one. She's the the pilot and the almost, in a way, almost the leader, even though Kanan was also kind of the leader. They kind of almost flipped back and forth on that. So I didn't relate Hera necessarily, or this character, Kasha, or Kasha, to Hera as we see her in Rebels, more to Hera as we saw her in A New Dawn. I did see some similarities there. Yeah.
No, I think you're, that's a great pull, because she is very similar to that Hera. And honestly, I remember reading A New Dawn when it came out and kind of falling in love with the character of Hera. Then I thought she was really great, really fun, interesting character. And then, of course, throughout the series, you know, just even more so with her growth there. So I thought that was excellent. You know, what's also fascinating is that we have Lando and his past and the big connection with a character who's going to be huge in Solo, which is L3. And I really thought it was interesting because L3 really brings us into a lot of things we're going to get with the villain and droids. But also, she's the first person, well, droid, to recognize that, you know, Lando Calrissian is not just what he appears to be on the outside. That he's so, it's much more about what he's not able to say, but just the fact of what he does. And in the end, what he does is usually care about things you wouldn't expect Lando to care about with what he talks about. So I thought that was really fascinating, and especially too, just the fact that they have that the relationship that they do in the first place, and she's basically able to kind of drag Lando all over the place, and he just kind of follows her, and helps her out on her mission when he doesn't even understand what half the time what she wants. You know, I thought that was a really one of the things that did kind of helped ground this character. Just planting those seeds where you're going to see him be somebody a little bit different in the future.
Yeah, this is some great foreshadowing to Solo. Getting to see their relationship in this book before watching the movie is very helpful. So anyone that's read this book, I think you're going to be glad you read it before you watch Solo, because you get to see Lando and L3 and how important their relationship is. And you get to see some of L3's personality. And you do get this sense, like you were saying, this really great companionship and camaraderie between these two characters, Lando and L3. They've built this friendship that is to the point of, you know, Lando is not seeing her as some sort of, you know, droid that's there just to help him. You know, like we see other, you know, even C-3PO kind of comes across that way. Even R2-D2 comes across that way. Although they have very big personalities, they still seem very subservient to the masters, you know, the people they call master. But in this is a friendship, this is a partnership, and not necessarily a master-droid relationship. And you really get to see that in this book, and that carries into Solo as well. I thought it was some really cool insight, and I was glad we got to see a lot from that character before having to go see the movie.
Yes. Well, and I what I thought was kind of interesting, too, is them kind of giving you the swan song of the character, even though we haven't even seen her in the movie, like... You know, that the fact that we get the feeling like she's not around anymore by the end of the story, which happens, you know, post aftermath series. But something has happened to her along the way. But the way that relationship, I absolutely agree with you. It makes me very excited to watch Solo and see how that plays out. And it made her a very interesting character, much in the way I felt like that so many people fell in love with K2. I feel like L3 is another droid where they've created a very interesting, very different type of droid so that you can gravitate towards them for different reasons than you do other droid characters. Them doing that, I think it just shows how much... I honestly think it's got to take a lot of work to create droid personalities that don't just feel reminiscent to what we've had before. Right. And this was really nice because this is very different and I really enjoyed it.
Right. And remember, like we even just seeing Empire Strikes Back, you already know she's not around. So it's not even a matter of seeing or reading this book to see post Return of the Jedi. Like, yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, she's where is she at? you know, we've seen Lando in Return of the Jedi, or in Empire and in Return of the Jedi, where he's not with a droid. So it's kind of like, okay, where is she at this point?
So he's with Lobot. So, yeah. I mean, he's droid-ish.
Right. Yeah. Cyborg. But yeah, so there is that kind of gap of like, oh, we're, you know, they were friends at this point in this book. They're friends in the movie. Obviously, we've seen from the trailer, you know, what happens in the story where she's mm-hmm. not around later on.
Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe that's something that they answer in Solo.
Maybe it is.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see. So I'm not even going to ask you. So so we do talking about droids. This is where everything starts to kind of coalesce as a story. The main villain here is Gore, and he is a Powan from Utapau, if you don't remember from episode 3, who was a doctor. He finds himself and his best friend kidnapped from medical school. And along the journey of being kidnapped, turns into a raving, crazy lunatic.
Yes,
who
he does.
Basically wants to become the Borg King, I guess, because he decides that, you know, droids are really superior to humans because they last forever. Humans are pathetic and weak, organic beings are pathetic and weak. And this all happens in the span of, like, it seems like 48 hours in his life. He's crazy pants.
He was the weakest part of the story for me, honestly. I thought at the beginning when they first introduced him and you're seeing what's happening with, I guess he's in like medical school and he's got his buddy that's with him and his buddy ends up getting shot. And all those events start to happen, and I actually found him very interesting. A Powan looks, they have a look that would look good as a villain, so I can even imagine this like in a movie where you have him as this villain. With a name like Faizan Gore, like that's kind of a tip-off in and of itself that he's not going to necessarily be a good guy. So I thought at the beginning I found him interesting, but as they start transitioning him, and his logic of this whole, you know, putting human parts onto droids. And you're kind of like, you can kind of see the logic where he's saying he's trying to improve on the weak humans. But it's almost like, why are we putting human parts on droids? Wouldn't you just make droids more, or more, make humans droids? I don't know. It seemed a little backwards to me. Like, why putting a rotting arm onto a droid, which is like the first thing that he did. I didn't get the logic behind it. And he did, he turned into the, like you said, he turned into this raving lunatic by the end of it, where I liked him better as an intellectual bad guy, kind of like along the lines of a Thrawn style. And I was excited for that potential at the beginning. And then when he just turned into this crazy man, I was like, oh, less interesting to me. Cause I can't relate with the crazy.
No, absolutely. And it was interesting because, you know, his plan is to turn the droids all over the galaxy into people killers, to just flip the switch to create, you know, mass murder across the galaxy, so that really it's droids that now rule the galaxy instead of organic beings. And it did, again, like you said, though, too, the whole idea of, like, putting organic flesh with a droid, it seemed very strange to me. Like, again, it felt a lot like the Borg from Star Trek in some ways, but not quite as developed as that, you know.
But it was kind of reversed, right? Because with the Borg, you're taking a human and you're trying to turn them
technology
into a robot, right? It's like this was the other way around, which I could have totally bought into a Borg style idea,
right?
Or wipe out the humans altogether and just have droids rule. Mm-hmm. And have Faizan, you know, maybe he upgrades himself with droid parts so he can be the leader of the droids, like a General Grievous type.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I could have totally bought into that. But the idea, like, he's harvesting parts and, like, going and slaughtering Wookiee children and using their parts to put onto droids. I didn't see the advantage of how are you making a droid better by putting, you
right.
know, organic
right.
parts on them? It just seemed backwards.
Right. Yeah. No. that is the part that does kind of fall apart because it doesn't really make sense logically. But as we already discussed, he's a raving total lunatic.
Yeah, at what point did that flip switch? Because he seemed so smart at the beginning. He was very intelligent.
I don't know how you go from medical student to raving total lunatic in like the span of a day, but apparently it can happen. So
I guess it takes trauma.
I wanted to ask you though, just kind of what do you think of now about this idea of the, you know, this whole thing with droids and all now being in Star Wars canon? Did it seem to fit well for you, this kind of thing happening in Star Wars?
Yeah, it fits because we've seen kind of this droid uprising style storytelling in Legends. You know, they had an entire droids comic series that was kind of this droid uprising, and it makes sense to have a storyline that's kind of that idea. I don't necessarily like the device or what led to it. As far as having Fize and Gore and the whole like, you know, fusing human parts with droids, I didn't like that side of it, but I do like the idea of a droid uprising storyline. So I think it definitely fits, and it felt very much like a Star Wars story. You know, the whole time I'm reading it, you know, everything about it felt very Star Wars, traveling, you know, to different planets and the droids and this device they're trying to recover that can transmit kind of this command. You know, that's all stuff that fits very well in Star Wars lore.
So having just read the Brian Daley books, I felt like this was very much kind of a spiritual successor to those in some ways. It felt like those where, you know, it's all very grounded. You know, this is very much a threat that Han and Lando should be the ones to take care of, you know, so it didn't feel like anything that's out of that wheelhouse. So really liked that. I agree. I think it fits well with Star Wars. It makes it interesting. We've seen lots of crazy things with, you know, people and droids and all that kind of stuff. When we think about Vader or Grievous and all of that kind of stuff. And the most interesting thing to me was, in what we learn about droids, especially from L3, about how, you know, they talk about the Maker and how, you know, in a lot of ways they are human-like and that they can learn from their programming. And it almost seemed to me like they were going to push it into, can droids be sentient? But then it almost felt like, too, by the end they pull it back to say, yes, we can grow, but there's only so much we can grow. We can't, you know, we can't do anything completely against our programming in the end. So I just thought it was interesting them exploring that idea, because it's something like John Mills and I have talked about on Gross Negotiations, the idea of droids and where they kind of fit on that spectrum. And so I thought this book kind of at least discussing that was really an interesting discussion.
Yeah, I like how Star Wars has treated droids, you know, slash robots in the Star Wars universe. I like that there is this kind of weird balance between, are they just machines that are created to help you, or are they actual sentient beings? And you kind of get the sense of both in Star Wars. You get to see droids like K2SO and C-3PO and R2-D2 that feel very sentient with very strong personalities. Even L3 would fall in that category. But then you see other droids that don't. You know, they just do seem like these machines, these battery droids that walk
like
around.
Gonk or droids, yeah.
Gonk, yeah. And droids getting, you know, ripped apart where you're like, oh gosh, if I thought of that as a sentient thing, then I should feel really bad that R2 unit just got its head ripped off. So, yeah, they do play with this kind of, this fine line between, you know, are they sentient or are they not? And I think that this book kind of stayed within those rules, those rules of Star Wars. They didn't go so far as to say that they are, you know, completely sentient, but they didn't go the other direction either. But I think L3 is an interesting droid because I do think that she does start, you do start to get a feeling from her specifically, and, you know, not, I won't spoil anything from the movie, but that does carry over into the movie as well with her personality, that you start to see her as, you know, the way that she's treated by Lando, especially, that she is a bit more than a droid to him.
Well, and I think, you know, that's something that goes all the way back to the way Anakin deals with R2-D2.
True.
You know, he treats him like a person.
And he goes out of his way to rescue him, even to put himself in danger, to put others in danger to rescue this essentially machine. So yeah, there's a precedence for it in Star Wars.
Well, and it also kind of, to me, in a lot of ways, it makes sense because I feel like droids are kind of like the mechanical pets of the Star Wars galaxy, you know, and people put a lot more into their pets and who they are to them. That makes sense to me. Like, you become emotionally attached to something because it matters to you, and therefore, I feel like, you know, like when you think of a character like R2-D2, I feel like it really rubs off on him, you know? That's what makes R2-D2 such a special droid, as it's almost like the way he was treated helped create who he is. And I wonder if that's something we'll see a little bit with L3, or if she was just like that, or I don't know, but it's a really cool way to deal with it without going the like Data from Star Trek route.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it does seem too much, or it does seem like it has to do with their programming as well. You know, how much freedom you allow the droid to have in their programming, where, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a droid that has some sort of a control unit that's tampering down their programming to have emotion, then they're not going to act a certain way. But other, you know, droids like R2-D2 have kind of, you know, he's never had the wipe, you know, the mind wipe type thing that happened to C-3PO. So it gives him a little bit more of that independent personality. So it is a lot about their programming and what has been allowed, what they've been allowed to show in personality. So
just some random tidbit things that I wanted to ask you about before we wrap up. One, so apparently Gungans can speak normally.
Yes, nice twist. I thought that was funny. I actually, they come across this Gungan character that's a kind of a prison guard or something. I guess he wasn't really a guard, but he was kind of working at the prison.
Yeah, he's like the guy that sits at the front desk.
He's at the desk, kind of,
directing
you to the right, you know, location. But I did like the fact that they were kind of, you know, he's just like, oh, what, you expect me to talk a certain way? You know, it was a nice little twist. I actually found that more, that didn't hit me as hard as the Ewok, as far as trying to wrap my head around the Ewok, the slicer.
Being a slicer.
Ewok.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peekpa. When I first got to that part and they were talking about an Ewok that's like this computer genius, I was like, what? You know, I did have a moment of hesitation before I bought in to it, because I did eventually buy into it and enjoyed it. But there was a moment of like, wait, I don't know if this should be a thing, or if, do I want Star Wars to start? I've always been of the opinion, I've had people scold me on this, so I'm sure people that are listening to this will probably be scolding me. But I do feel like there are certain races in Star Wars, certain species that don't fit well in certain roles. Like, I would never want to see an Ewok Jedi. I would never want to see, you know, there's certain things that I just don't think work. Like, even a pilot, like, I think, you know, there was the popular Gamorrean pilot in the old mm-hmm. legend yeah. stuff, mm-hmm. which super no. popular with a lot of people. I just could never buy into it. So, and I think this kind of falls in that territory where, like, Ewoks as computer geniuses, not that much time has passed since Endor. So what schools did she go to learn this stuff? It was a little bit whatever, but at the same time, I was like, okay, let me just have fun with it. It didn't, you know, it was fun, and I actually did end up enjoying the character.
Yeah, you know, I will say on the Gungan thing, you know, the whole Gungan thing that the character even says, how many Gungans have you met? You know? And so, let me round that to one. But the thing is that we've met a ton of Gungans, especially in the Clone Wars, and none of them have normal speaking voices. They all talk like Jar Jar.
Right.
Unless this Gungan was raised and away from Naboo, which it doesn't seem like he was, then he would probably talk like that. But I can let it go because it creates a funny thing.
It's a funny joke.
Yeah, it's a funny joke.
And you can do it. You can do the whole explain it away. Maybe he went left Naboo when he was younger. Yeah. And
maybe he went to school with the Naboo. You know, who knows?
He lost his accent.
There you go. with Peekpa, it was, I am 100% with you. I kind of did the thing in my head. Maybe she just found out she really liked technology once the Empire Death Star exploded above her planet, and she hopped on with some rebels and apparently had a knack for technology. Okay, whatever. I think that this is the part of the story where they were just having a good time with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that works in a Lando Han book to me. Like, I really, I'm not going to get upset about them doing something funny or
goofy. It works in a Daniel Jose older book, apparently, yes. too. Like, mm-hmm. I think this is what we're learning about this author now that he's written the From the Certain Point of View story that was very comedic and kind of tested the limits of what, comedy in Star Wars is. And I think this book continued that. So if we get another book by him somewhere down the road, we're going to expect, there's going to be more unexpected characters and, pushing the limits of humor. And it's his style. And I think that once you figure that out and that's what you expect, then you can kind of get on board with it and roll with it. So the next Daniel Jose older book that they announce, I'm going to be like, all right, if I'm in the mood for a fun, irreverent Star Wars adventure, then I'm going to pick up a Daniel Jose older book.
Mm-hmm. And there were only a couple of places where I felt like that the humor maybe pushed the boundaries too much. Like, we're trying to be too funny here. You don't have to, I would say that there are a couple of times where for me personally, it almost went to that Thor Ragnarok level where everything is a joke. But I felt like then when I, in the end, overall, he was able to find a pretty decent balance, because there were some very poignant moments, especially with Han and especially with Lando and with their relationships that they have, that I thought were well done. So, in the end, for you, Aaron, kind of just wrapping up, I mean, there's so much more that we could talk about, but where would you land on Last Shot? What would you rate it, do you think?
Rating it, I have a hard time rating books. Books are very much, it's kind of like, did I like it, did I not like it, or did I love it? And this is one where I say I liked it. It started out, I loved it. At the beginning, everything, I thought there was a lot of potential with the villain. I loved the kind of more fun tone to the book. And I really went in really enjoying it off the bat. And I think it kind of, as the story went on and, Fives and Gore became a little less interesting to me. And it felt like it plotted along a little bit toward the end. I definitely got more into the, okay, I like it territory, but kind of lost that I love it. So I don't know what that would fall on a rating. What, 3.5 stars out of 5, maybe something like that?
No, I'm absolutely right there with you. I would say that I'm 3.5 out of 5 random body parts. because it is. I feel like it's a fun story. I do think that this book does a great job of kind of getting you ready for the Solo movie. But it also, I think, gave me a nice taste of these characters after Return of the Jedi, which is, I've kind of been missing that. And if you want to know more about Han and Lando in that time period, I think this book is definitely worth picking up and giving a read, because it was great to see that progression of their characters after that. So
yeah, I think evidenced by our lack of bringing him up, there wasn't enough Chewbacca in this book. He was in the book.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a big absolutely. Character. They didn't. And he's a hard one to do in a book, because you can't, he's speaking, Shiriwook and not.
Yeah. I've always just felt like if you're going to write Chewie, just write his dialogue, because most of the people understand who he is, what he's saying. I don't know. I feel like, or you could just put it in parentheses, but just put what he's actually saying and we'll get it,
Yeah. I think it was, there was a trilogy they did back in the Legends stuff that actually did just post the dialogue, because they had so much happening on the Wookiee homeworld. It was that other race that kind of was like the Usen Vong before the Usen Vong, Black Fleet Crisis. Okay, it just came.
Oh yes, okay.
Yeah, Black Fleet Crisis had a whole, you know, bunch of stuff that was happening on the Wookiee homeworld, and I think I remember they just basically said, yeah, this is what they're saying. They put it in parentheses. But yeah, he's a hard character to put into a book, so I can see why they didn't use him as much. But the movie Solo, you know, it's very much a Han and Lando story, but Chewbacca is a huge part of that as well. So if you didn't get enough Chewbacca in Last Shot, definitely you'll get plenty of Chewbacca in Solo, a Star Wars story.
Yeah, I mean, and I love Chewie, so I'm right there with you, and I'm actually excited to see him being played up so much in Solo trailers and stuff. So I'm hoping he has a really big role there.
It's the best, you know, for me, having seen the movie, my favorite Chewbacca movie. You know,
that's great.
You know, Chewbacca's been in a lot of Star Wars movies. This was the best that I've seen him in a Star Wars movie. The most awesome. I felt like he was a character and not necessarily a sidekick.
See, that's what I've been waiting for. So now I'm super excited. Hopefully, Aaron and I have all primed you for seeing Solo this weekend. And if you've already seen this, because this is in the future and you're listening, well, mazel tov. I'm really excited. I've run it for the movie. And, of course, I want to really thank our associate producers here through Patreon, Ken Tripp and Davis Grayson, for being the associate producers and making sure that the 602 Club and all of the shows we do here on the network keep coming to you. Now, this is a big network, and there's absolutely no way that we as the host can make it come to you each and every week all by ourselves. So go over to patreon.com/trekfm and you can support the network and make sure all the shows that we have here keep coming to you each and every week. Again, that is patreon.com/trekfm. Now, Aaron, love having you on the show. Really appreciate you being here, but you've got a lot going on and other places that people should be following you and liking you and checking out your podcast. So where can people find you?
The main places to find me, I'm on Twitter at AV Goins, mostly talking about nerdy stuff there. So, pretty good follow. I also have a couple podcasts that I do at Star Wars Bookworms. I do with Teresa Delgado, which we do all the books and comics. I do a lot of reviews and just talking, about Star Wars in general and having a lot of fun with it. I also have a couple other podcasts that are kind of on pause right now, but both still exist. Bad Wolf Radio, which is a Doctor Who podcast, which we will be ramping that back up pretty soon with the approach of the new Doctor, and excited for all of the changes that are coming with Doctor Who. And then I have another podcast that I do with Jonah Marie Macias about Lego Star Wars. And we did reviews of all the Freemaker adventures, but we also talk about Lego sets and things like that. And that's called Star Scavengers.
Man, and Lego Star Wars, just so good, especially Freemaker Adventures. So yeah, do yourself a favor, check all of those podcasts out. I listen to all of them, so I highly recommend. You could find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. I'm here on the network doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I'm over on the Nerd Party Network talking about Star Wars with my good friend John Mills on Aggressive Negotiations. It's a great little show. I think you're going to love it, especially if you love Star Wars, which if you're listening to this, you probably do. You can also find me on Outposts with Drag Kaufman talking about each and every chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then last but not least, I talk about films through the lens of faith with my good friend Courtney over on Cinema Stories. But thank you so much for joining us, and may the Force be with you.